This podcast has been created by the Association of Independent Schools New South Wales. It has been designed for the new common module, Texts and Human Experiences, to be implemented in 2019 as part of the New South Wales English Standard, Advanced and English Studies courses. This podcast provides a brief introduction to Kenneth Slessor and his poems set for study in this module, as well as a reading of each of the poems. It is presented by Dr. Felicity Plunkett, an award-winning poet and the poetry editor for the University of Queensland Press.
The poet Coleridge once described poetry as the best words in the best order. In his brilliant book, How to Read a Poem and Fall in Love with Poetry, US poet Edward Hirsch writes that reading poetry calls for an active reader. The reader must imaginatively collaborate with a poem to give voice to it. You can ask, what are the best words that make up this poem and what is their order? What patterns can we see here and how are the syllables, words and images orchestrated? The foundation of this is to keep in mind that you're looking for the ways a poem's form is shaped by and shapes its ideas. You can think of this interplay in terms of what the poem says, themes, subject matter and so on, and how it says it, line movement, imagery, structure, diction, and so on. And then the connections between the two. So what are the best words that make up this poem and what is their order? What returns, persists, recurs, flows from poem to poem? What kinds of voices do we hear? What does Slessor draw our attention to? What elements combine to make up Slessor's unique poetics? Close, attentive reading is the vital part of this. Of course, poems are not codes to be cracked, but you can find patterns of meaning, and looking for those is the imaginative and collaborative work of reading a poem. Here, we're also thinking about the lens of texts and human experiences. To start at the end, Slessor wrote Out of Time in 1938 when he was just 37 years old. Not long afterwards, he wrote the breathtaking poem Five Bells, which is possibly his masterpiece. Then he stopped writing poetry. These poems are full of vitality and movement, colour and sensuality. The figure of time, unsurprisingly, is central. And it's central to Slessor's examination of human experience. Both poems begin by evoking time, and Five Bells and Out of Time loop around and across one another, as a poet's work often does. Ideas and images recur from poem to poem, surfacing and resurfacing. It's a good idea to go through the poems looking for repeated words and images and thinking about how these surface in different ways, and how they look in the light of a particular poem. Out of Time and Five Bells explore similar ideas about time, human experience, and mortality. Since it was with this pair of poems that Slessor completed his poetic work, they offer a good frame to look back at his work as a whole. Five Bells begins by distinguishing two types of time, one measured neurotically by clocks, as though by meticulous clerks, the other associated with movement and flow. The poem begins. Time that is moved by little fidget wheels is not my time, the flood that does not flow. Slessor goes on to imagine Sydney Harbour. Deep and dissolving verticals of light ferry the falls of moonshine down. Five bells coldly rung out in a machine's voice. This moving elegy to Joe Lynch, who died when he drowned in Sydney Harbour, comes to rest at the point where Joe escapes time, a name, burial, and finally, the narrator's call. Where have you gone? The tide is over you. The turn of midnight's waters over you. As time is over you, and mystery, and memory, the flood that does not flow. These same elements begin out of time. Time, flow, Sydney Harbour, a wave enfolding the speaker like Joe's underwater burial. Each poem has the sensuous imagery of the harbour, which at the time was one of numerous elements that distinguished Slessor's poetry from other Australian poets' work. Out of Time opens with the speaker reflecting on the scene of the harbour and imagining time as an actor in the scene. I saw time flowing like 100 yachts that fly behind the daylight, foxed with air, or piercing like the quince bright bitter slats of sun gone thrusting under harbour's hair. So time, the wave, enfolds me in its bed, or time, the bony knife, it runs me through. Time with a capital T, a character, an actor, a subject here, is associated with movement and urgency. There's a string of verbs, flowing, piercing, thrusting, and enfolds. While flowing and enfolding suggest gentleness, in the company of all the urgency and violence suggested by piercing, thrusting, and the image of time as the bony knife that runs me through, they seem far less nurturing. Time is a wave that enfolds me in its bed, which all sounds very lovely until you consider the context of the harbour. Similarly, in Five Bells, Joe is imagined as little more than the memory of some bones long shoved away and sucked away in mud on the harbour's bed. So this enfolding is a drowning, a murder. In this poem and Slessor's poems, there's a to and fro movement like a pulse, restlessly moving between possibilities and contrasts. This relates to the rubric's emphasis on the anomalies, paradoxes, and inconsistencies of human behaviour. It also relates to the famous motif in the poem William Street, "You find it ugly, I find it lovely." The pivot between the ugly and lovely as that half rhyme and echo connect and interrogate those concepts. You'll see this to and fro in here, in images that begin by suggesting something beautiful or gentle, but shift towards darkness. This stunning image is one example. Quince bright, bitter slats of sun gone thrusting under harbour's hair. The gentle image of water bending the seaweeds in the sea is another. At first, it feels whimsical, inviting, but in the context of all the muscular, relentless verbs relating to time and the adjectives that underline all this action, words like vilely, continuously, stupidly, the struggle feels more intense. More of these images spill over into Five Bells, the sway of undersea plants and time flowing over the mortal body like water. We are mortal, these poems remind us. We can't escape time. There is no way out of time. And to be out of time, musically, rhythmically, or to feel that you're out of time, to be outside of something or out of step, is a painful alienation at the heart of human experience. In this poem, all the relentless forwards moving energy of time, the return of key lines and images, is itself wave-like and emphatic. Repetition is insistent, like time, and by the end of the poem, the key images with which the poem begins return. The body dies, the poem tells us, and rots. And again, Five Bells imagines the experience of a physical death and the decomposition of the body in stark images. We might have, quote, lovely moments, but time moves us on so they are behind us. To delve further into the music and rhythm of this poem that emphasise these cycles and this inescapable patterning, the stop-start, cyclic patterns, and the orchestration of its sounds, there's a wonderful piece by Ivor Indyk available online at Sydney Review of Books called Kenneth Slessor and Time, which you could consult. Indyk writes, "The way some lines of poetry stay with you, because of their rhythm, the images they evoke, something magical about their language, the feelings they play on, or all of these things together." Memory is another recurrent idea in Sless's poems. Time, in a way, makes memories, and it also steals them. Two of the set poems confront aspects of this. Wild Grapes traces one kind of memory. This is a poem of returning in the present to a place that evokes the past. It suggests how layered place is with our human experience and the way memory and remembering, as Freud says, involves a kind of archaeology, a layering of truths and histories. Full and empty, kiss and kill, the remembered and what it carries of the forgotten. This is a poem of pivots. Its orchestration is of point and counterpoint, and thinking about the interplay of these opposites helps focus on the way it is made and the tensions it highlights. You'll see that this image of kiss and kill is also in Out of Time. This motif reminds me of the paradox at the ending of the play Othello by Shakespeare, where Othello says, "I kissed thee ere I killed thee, no way but this, killing myself to die upon a kiss." In Out of Time, the line is part of a series of verbs, quench and ripen, embodying different possibilities, different ways. And this reminds me of Robert Frost's poem, The Road Not Taken, where he writes, "Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference." Decisions, choices, embodied in the image of love or death, kiss or kill, is central to these poems and to human experience. Wild Grapes ends with the image of a young woman, half fierce, half melting, and with uncertainty, another hallmark of human experience, especially because in the soft light and shadows of memory, we may not be able to tell the difference between kiss or kill. You'll see in this poem again the way the senses evoke memory and sensuous imagery of fruit, skin, and touch, as in those final poems, Five Bells and Out of Time. Beach Burial takes these poetic features, the sensuality, the corporeality, the sense of the fragile craft of the vulnerable human body, back to the water and to themes of memory and memorialization. Here, the bodies of soldiers are washed in the sea, in the liminal zone between one place and another, held gently by the sea as the poem becomes blessing, consolation, and elegy. Personal memory of a kiss in an orchard and memorializing of lives lost in war, and Slessor, as you'll know, was a war correspondent, are different modes of memory, and each is held in tension with forgetting. In his war dispatches, Slessor writes, "For a few moments at a little cluster of Australian graves, they were huddled together as if taking cover on the slope of a hill. The crosses were the simple sides of packing cases nailed at right angles, and the inscriptions, written with careful clumsiness in indelible pencil, had been smeared violet by the rain." You can hear the way the non-fiction underpins this poem, observed scenes, and that terrible sense of loss. Similarly, Joe Lynch's drowning means he is, quote, "gone even from the memory of a name." In some ways, Slessor's is a poetry of witness, as Beach Burial suggests. This is a poem that shows the smallness of human endeavour, war in this case, in the face of death, since the soldiers become just people who have died, bodies, joined together by the sand, as though in a kind of marriage or sacrament or peacemaking. Through the sonic elements of Beach Burial, Slessor crafts a kind of natural elegy. The elements and even the gunfire itself is part of a large chorus of mourning. This contrasts with Gulliver, a first-person lament, in which the speaker describes the many things that restrict and trap him, the tyranny of sinews. Here, Slessor creates a howl of a poem, a speaker railing against the small things that weigh him down. In the poem is a catalogue of the strings that shackle him: love, hunger, drunkenness, neuralgia, debt, cold weather, hot weather, sleep, and age. Slessor creates a dramatic monologue addressed to a you who is never identified. Whereas in Wild Grapes there is only one use of the word I, here the first person is in the spotlight, and the words I and me dominate, along with that you who is both to blame but who might hold the keys to rescue or respite. The vividness of this voice and the little touches of humour, cold weather, hot weather being one, and call the hangman a dark other, is something Slessor creates again in Vesper Song of the Reverend Samuel Marsden. Here, the grain of the voice is harsh, abrasive. Look at the diction that contributes to this. Brutes, hell, vileness, whip, wretch, and the patterns of sound, the rhythm. The tonal range between the poems suggests Slessor's range, his virtuosity, from the exquisite softness of sensual imagery to the raging abrasiveness of furious utterance, part of the range of human experience to which Slessor gives voice. Out of Time, 1. I saw time flowing like 100 yachts that fly behind the daylight, foxed with air, or piercing like the quince bright bitter slats of sun gone thrusting under harbour's hair. So time the wave enfolds me in its bed, or time the bony knife it runs me through. Skulker, take heart, I thought my own heart said. The flood, the blade go by, time flows, not you. Vilely, continuously, stupidly, time takes me, drills me, drives through bone and vein. So water bends the seaweeds in the sea. The tide goes over, but the weeds remain. Time, you must cry farewell, take up the track, and leave this lovely moment at your back. 2. Time leaves the lovely moment at his back, eager to quench and ripen, kiss or kill. Tomorrow begs him, breathless for his lack, or beauty dead entreats him to be still. His fate pursues him. He must open doors or close them for that pale and faceless host without a flag, whose agony implores birth to be flesh or funeral to be ghost. Out of all reckoning, out of dark and light, over the edges of dead nows and heres, blindly and softly as a mistress might, he keeps appointments with a million years. I and the moment laugh and let him go, leaning against his golden undertow. 3. Leaning against the golden undertow, backward, I saw the birds begin to climb with bodies hailstone clear, and shadows flow, fixed in a sweet meniscus, out of time, out of the torrent, like the fainter land lensed in a bubble's ghostly camera. The lighted beach, the sharp and china sand glitters and waters and peninsula. The moment's world it was, and I was part, fleshless and ageless, changeless and made free. Fool, would you leave this country, cried my heart, but I was taken by the suck of sea. The gulls go down, the body dies and rots, and time flows past them like 100 yachts. Beach burial. Softly and humbly to the Gulf of Arabs, the convoys of dead sailors come. At night they sway and wander in the waters far under, but morning rolls them in the foam. Between the sob and clubbing of the gunfire, someone, it seems, has time for this, to pluck them from the shallows and bury them in burrows and tread the sand upon their nakedness. And each cross, the driven stake of tidewood, bears the last signature of men, written with such perplexity, with such bewildered pity, the words choke as they begin. Unknown seamen, the ghostly pencil wavers and fades, the purple drips. The breath of the wet season has washed their inscriptions as blue as drowned men's lips. Dead seamen gone in search of the same landfall, whether as enemies they fought or fought with us or neither, the sand joins them together, enlisted on the other front. William Street. The red globe of light, the liquor green, the pulsing arrows and the running fire spilt on the stones go deeper than a stream. You find this ugly, I find it lovely. Ghosts' trousers like the dangle of hung men in pawn shop windows, bumping knee by knee, but none inside to suffer or condemn. You find this ugly, I find it lovely. Smells rich and rasping, smoke and fat and fish and puffs of paraffin that crimp the nose or grease that blesses onions with a hiss. You find it ugly, I find it lovely. The dips and molds with flip and shiny gaze, death at their elbows, hunger at their heels, ranging the pavements of their pasturage. You find this ugly, I find it lovely. Gulliver. I'll kick your walls to bits. I'll die scratching a tunnel if you'll give me a wall, if you'll give me a simple stone, if you'll do me the honour of a dungeon, anything but this tyranny of sinews. Lashed with 100 ropes of nerve and bone I lie, poor helpless Gulliver, in a twopenny dock for the want of a penny, tied up with stuff too cheap and strings too many. One chain is usually sufficient for a cur. Hair over hair I pick my cables loose, but still the ridiculous manacles confine me. I snap them, swollen with sobbing. What's the use? One hair I break, 10,000 hairs entwine me. Love, hunger, drunkenness, neuralgia, debt, cold weather, hot weather, sleep and age. If I could only unloose their spongy fingers, I'd have a chance yet, slip through this cage. But who ever heard of a cage of hairs? You can't scrape tunnels in a net. If you'd give me a chain, if you'd give me honest iron, if you'd graciously give me a turnkey, I could break my teeth on a chain. I could bite through metal. But what can you do with hairs? For God's sake, call the hangman. Vesper Song of the Reverend Samuel Marsden. My cure of souls, my cage of brutes, go lick and learn at these my boots. When tainted highways tear a hole, I bid my cobbler welt the soul. O ye that wear the boots of hell, shall I not welt a soul as well? O souls that leak with holes of sin, shall I not let God's leather in? Or hit with sacramental knout your twice convicted vileness out? Lord, I have sung with ceaseless lips a tinker's litany of whips. Have graved another testament on backs bowed down and bodies bent. My stripes of jewelled blood repeat a scarlet grace for holy meat. Not mine the hand that writes the wheel on this, my vellum of puffed veal. Not mine the glory that endures, but yours, dear God, entirely yours. Are there not saints in holier skies who have been scourged to paradise? O Lord, when I have come to that, grant there may be a heavenly cat with twice as many tails as here, and make me, God, your overseer. But if the veins of saints be dead, grant me a whip in hell instead, where blood is not so hard to fetch, but I, Lord, am your humble wretch.